When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hola, chicos y chicas. Many thanks for joining me on the Joy of Paddle podcast, spreading and sharing the supreme delight of this wonderful and fast-growing game. I'm your host, Minter Dial, and this podcast is brought to you by Paddle 1969, the largest manufacturer of premium paddle courts. One Court for Life by Paddle 1969. The Joy of Paddle is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network. For more information about this network, please go check out their site, evergreenpodcasts.com. So this is the second season for The Joy of Paddle, and as with last season, we'll be running an episode once every fortnight. Please let us know what you think about the show by putting up a rating and a review. And a very warm welcome for the fifth episode of the second season of the Joy of Paddle podcast. So this episode is with Danny Windahl. Danny is the number one Swedish paddle player, currently ranked 53rd in the world. A left-sided player, he partners with Jose Solano. We discuss Danny's remarkable personal and professional journey to becoming the highest-ranked Scandinavian paddle player and the second-highest-ranked player who isn't Spanish, Argentinian, or Brazilian. We talk about how he has faced off against the world's top players such as Ali Galan and Juan Lebron, his favourite shot and areas of improvement, as well as the life lessons that paddle has brought to him, in particular in dealing with mental health. Please enjoy the listen and share and subscribe to send out more Joy of Paddle to the world. Vamos! Daniel Windahl. Wow. I am so excited to have you on my show. You are certainly the highest ranked Scandinavian player that I'm aware of. You have been, you're followed by many, especially all over Scandinavia. I've seen some of your great exploits, maybe getting downed, but against the best, it's really impressive. Danny, in your own words, who are you?
Well, I'm a very normal guy, actually. I came from the tennis world and adapt to the paddle world real quickly. But besides paddle, I'm a very calm person that likes to watch football and especially Premier League in darts. I'm a fan of tennis as well and on watching.
Who do you follow in the Premier League?
Football or darts? I'm a big fan of Manchester United.
Right.
So we'll have to settle that one
off the court, Danny.
Yeah.
I'm from another one. And what about in darts?
Yeah, I'm following that pretty much. And my favorite is Raymond van Barneveld
from
the Netherlands.
Well, that's unexpected stuff. So that's brilliant. So let's start by Danny, talking about how you got into paddle. I mean, I know it's a little bit of a regular question, but it's always interesting to find that passage into paddle and why you went into paddle.
Well, for my part, it had been pretty chaotic when there was the one moment that I choose paddle. My first try was when I was 17. Just for fun, just for playing, just to have something to do besides tennis. And my eyes grow for the sport. And when I was turning 20, when I've been through 3 years of depression and a lot of bad habits in my tennis career, I just switch. And when I had my darkest period in tennis, I had like 1, 2, 3 months after I was putting the tennis career on stop, where I was actually playing paddle Monday to Friday instead of playing tennis 5 to 6 hours a day, I played 5 to 6 hour paddle a day. And this period of my time, I was very happy. I'm still happy, but that was the first time in 3 years that I really enjoyed life, and I was having a laugh, and I was like enjoying the moment. So from that point and on, I seek up more and knowledge about the sport, and I was starting off as a coach actually. So on that path, I just grew.
Well, I'm sorry to hear about the those dark days. But delighted that paddle was the light at the end of the darkness. I want to just go back quickly to the portion where 10 years, so 10 years ago, you discovered paddle while you were playing tennis. Was that because you were at a facility that had paddle on the side? And because a lot of the Spaniards will maybe go young on playing tennis, and then paddle is the fun thing on the end of the day, like going for a swim.
For my part, I live in a, I left I was in a very small town called Båstad, and Båstad had the one of the first courts ever in Sweden. It's a very known for the tennis and the tournaments and the big House of the Summer tournaments in Båstad. So that's why I just tried it once or twice that summer, and
There you go. So, but what about this decision to play paddle as your fun, as opposed to tennis? Because I mean, at the end of the day, both of them are good workouts. You've got a racket, you've got a ball that looks similar. Why is it that paddle gave you that light?
I mean, that in that moment I found paddle and started off to play a lot more. For me, it was a lifeline, for sure, because I was in so deep in that darkness that I was standing on the train station and wanted to move on. And this was the first thing that, brought light into my mind beside my family, my girlfriend, that I like really want to know more about. So it was curiosity, and I just loved the way people were, and they were so open. It was like regular people, and in the beginning I was playing like 6 o'clock in the morning with three guys who was turning 55 or 60. And if you are like looking from the perspective of the outside, that wouldn't have happened in the tennis career, in my tennis life. And those three people I would think about now, those are our great friends even today. And I still having a laugh about that time, and we're having a good time. So even I just played for fun, and now it's becoming like a lifestyle, and it have been, I've been learning so much about paddle and learning so much about people, and I've been getting to know a lot of people, which is really fun that as well.
I love that journey and the fact that you're still in touch with those oldsters, like guys like me. That's brilliant. So your route into paddle is definitely a different style of route, although you did come from tennis and you got to this point of playing more. At what point did you go pro?
I don't know, because I was a coach for maybe 1.5, 2 years. So when I was turning 23, 24, that was the moment I felt like, okay, I'm practicing to become a better player, and I'm like not having that amount on the court as a coach. So until 23, 24, I was like putting in the effort with the fitness, with the scheduling, with the tournament, and the traveling. So I would say since then, actually. And I still have the videos of me going on my first paddle trip to Marbella. And when I see those footages and videos, I can't believe that is the same person that is sitting here today. I was so shit.
Well, sometimes it's like you're listening to your own voice. It's hard to do. And of course, I'm a 60-year-old, and to share, I will sometimes think, oh, I really got that shot. I had some grace in that shot. But when I see footage of the same thing, it is nothing like what I have in my mind of me. Well,
And
excuse me.
it was no worries, but I have a so funny memory in my mind, and it's my first time where I was going to Marbella, and where I was invited to play like a Sweden versus Spain tournament for like beginners. And I was playing the janitor, who was 60 years old, and his friend there was maybe 50, 55. And I was going there as a 23 years old, really fit. I was strong,
Good
and I
tennis
was like,
player.
yeah, and I lost. And it took a turn in my head that I was not expecting.
Yeah, I
So,
can just imagine. And where, what, do you remember which club you were playing in Marbella?
No, it was this club, NAC, Nueva Alcántara
Oh
Club.
yeah, Nueva
But it
Alcántara,
was
sure.
the old one.
Yeah, well, that was the one I grew up on. Imagine that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I started playing paddle in 1974 with that racket behind me at the
Yeah.
Marbella Club, and then at Nueva Alcántara with Luisito Nieto and
Yeah.
Nacho and that gang. I totally know it. The new gang is much more Swedish, I should say.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, very different than the knack of the
Yeah.
old days. All right, well, that's
Yeah.
brilliant. And you turn pro, and then you have to get into the system. Because if you're not living in Spain and
No.
getting the tournament, the rises, the easy access to points, how did you approach that? Did you need to get sponsoring? What was your approach to
Yeah,
that?
my first thing was to get sponsored, obviously, to afford to go to Madrid, to Barcelona, to just to feel the what the players that are like professional are doing. So I remember my first professional journey was when I was playing my first World Padel Tour tournament, and I got there 1.5 week before, and I got to see Bela practice. I got to see a lot of players practice, and I saw what they are doing on the gym. I saw what they are doing on the court. And when I was done with that tournament, we lost the first round in the pre-qualification in World Padel Tour, and yeah, I wasn't that good at the moment, but I just felt like, okay, if they are doing this amount of hours on the gym and on the court, and from my perspective, it was not even half of the time I thought they were putting in. So I started to, okay, if they are doing 1 hour, I'm gonna do 2 hours on the gym. If they are gonna do 2 hours on the court, I'm gonna go do 4 hours on the court. So that was my like haunting motivation all the time. If they are doing this, I'm doing this. And I'm that kind of person that if I'm locked into something, that is also my Achilles in Padel. I'm maybe getting too much curiosity in the work I'm doing, like it's the only thing that existing. So I'm very like fired up of doing or putting the work in. So at that time, it was exactly what I needed. So that's the way I turned pro, and I got sponsored to help me with some travels and some tournaments. But even though I was beating up last 6-1-6 love in those tournaments, I was like the next time I got there and played the same couples, I maybe took 2-3 games more. And that fired that like the thing in my head, okay, next time I'm gonna take a set, next time I'm gonna win the match. And eventually I got there where we won our first match. We got to play more tournaments. We got points. We didn't need to request a wild card. And every time I got from Spain, I know, okay, this I need to improve. This I need to improve. I need to play more fast, more slow. I need to put maybe the fitness level to another step. I had to be quicker, I had to be stronger and everything. So I did it very, very serious.
Yeah, you put in the hours in the work. And so what do you do to keep the joy in your life? It sounds like, you're worried about it being too serious. Is there something that you do to balance out the seriousness and all the hard work that you're putting in on the paddle court?
And that's why that's my thing right now, because at the moment I know how to play every shot. I know how to move on the court, what I want to accomplish on the court, on the training, on a match. And right now I don't need to put in the 6 hours a day that I needed by then. So now I'm putting maybe 3, 4 hours, and those 3, 4 hours are with very a lot of confidence and quality. And when I'm done, I'm like putting all paddle aside to focusing on my fiance, with my family, my friends, and maybe to watch a football game and to watch dart. So I really need this switch off button. That is very important for me. And when I'm happy, I'm playing really good. And to get happy, I need to find these some sort of stuff to do besides paddle. In that case, it doesn't get that too big, you know?
I do. The funny thing for me is in my life, paddle plays that role for me, which is just hanging out with friends, having a cerveza afterwards, because I know you speak good Spanish. I want to talk about the choice of partner, because you're fortunate you speak Spanish. You've
Well,
made your
decent.
yeah, well enough, right? You make your living on the left side of the court. Choosing a partner, how easy is that? When you're 50th in the world, you're obviously very good, yet usually what the problem is always finding the right balance, the right partner. What are you looking for in your partner?
The first thing I'm looking for, it's the chemistry. I care about how they play, obviously, but the really important thing for me is the chemistry. Okay, how is this person gonna work with me when the wind is blowing in our back or against us? When it's going bad, when it's going good, is that the person I want to go to war to in on the court when the wind is blowing as highest? And that's a really important thing. Is it a guy who run from the problem or run to the problem to solve it? Because a lot of players in the paddle world is a lot of they want to gain the results very quickly, and they are maybe encouraging to a new project and want to do a really good one, a good work, and after three tournaments they don't see the results and changing partner. And if you are gonna get to that partnership that you want to have, and a long-lasting relationship, is it's the same thing outside the paddle. You have to get to know me, you have to know how they are working, both with the paddle thing, but also outside, how they are thinking, how do they want to warm up before a match or before a train? How much are they willing to put in the work during the tournament and after the tournament and the between. So that's a really important thing for me when I'm seeking my partner, besides how they are playing. Obviously, they have to have some standards, but that's the most important thing for me with the chemistry. Then if we are feeling good, if my partner is happy and me, I'm happy, I know that we can reach some sort of level that we can maybe go to a quarterfinal or so, which is our goal. And yeah, that's the most important thing.
It does feel a little bit like a marriage
Yeah,
in
for
that
sure.
the challenge is knowing how to get through the hard times. You know,
Exactly.
puppy love when you know each other for a few months and maybe a year, and then something deep happens, something difficult happens. It can be bad news or whatever. And how do you get through that bad news? You know, getting thumped by a team you shouldn't have beat lost to. Do you walk off and, you know, blame each other? Or do you think about that as a lovely learning lesson and figure out, you know, how to improve?
Yeah, you have to
So,
see your part in it all the time. You cannot rely that your partner is the problem. It's often you have something to do with it.
yeah, even if it's the communications. And what about your what is setting down a target, an ambition for a couple like you and Solano? How do you establish that objective, a mutual objective? You know, because you always want to do more, you want to be better, you want to earn this, you want to, you know, get to number one, why not? But how do you come up with something that is an objective that works for you?
Yeah, we have been friends for a lot of years, and we have been playing together for maybe two and a half year back and forth, and we are thinking the same in the padel court, and we have a lot of strengthness that together could be a big weapon that we can use towards all the pairs on the tour. And when we have been playing those big matches, we have been feeling the world number ones, and felt that, but we have some weapons that can like win the point against everybody. Okay, if we can use that weapon and together feel the rhythm that we can both reach, we know we can both reach, then we can seriously gain a lot of confidence and win a lot of matches. And that's the way, and that's a positivity that leans to, okay, if we can beat these type of couples, where do we put the bar, the flag on the green, or I don't know, where is the next step? And when we have been talking about that, it's a quarterfinal we really want to reach, and we really want to believe that it's possible. And then we need to win the top, maybe some top eight, top 16 couples. And for me, that doesn't scare me, but it's a high mountain to climb still.
It is. It's very impressive. You had, let's say, the fortune or misfortune, according to how you want to look at it, of playing the guys who just did their last dance, as they're all saying in Spanish, Galán and LeBron. And both times, you bet them both times in roughly the round of 32, I can't remember. And both times, you had an amazing first set. Tell us what it's like to play them. I mean, from my angle, I watch them, you know, everyone, by the way, a lot, and I can say I'm an analyst of the games. It's hard for us to, from the sidelines, really get it. I've had the chance to play with some very good players, top 100 for sure. So I know a little bit what it's like, but I'm 60, so it's much harder. But you were there, and you were at their level. You were playing even with them. What's it like to play a Galan and LeBron?
No, they are obviously one of the best players in the world, and they are having so they have they're having so many weapons on their hand. They can play whatever card you have, and they have answers to everything. And it is a speed that you are not used to, and that's why I'm very grateful for having them as an opponent for the first two tournaments. And now in Mexico, we played against Shingo at the moment, but it's really good to have that start, to feel that rhythm. And when I was getting back from those tournaments, I felt how slow the ball went in Sweden. And
A walk in the park.
not walking the park, but the speed was remarkably different. And they are always pushing you to the limit, that you are need to have some sort of luck and play at your highest limits. And when you we have a bad saying in Swedish, but I don't want to say it in English, but when you have that threat towards you are playing so on so little margin all the time. And in an important moment, they are like increasing the level even more. So you need to play at your limits all the time and to have a little bit of luck. And that's why they are the best in the world.
It's very daunting in my mind. You imagine, even your best shot, they just sort of walk over a cup of tea, and well, I exaggerate a little bit, but they feel like they see the ball a mile ahead of time. They Galanda, I don't. I mean, although the last match he played was very, very sloppy from him. But there's basically you feel that he's a wall at the net. You can hit it with a gun and he would still get that ball.
For sure. He's the far best player on blocking the ball, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, there are others who are quick like Dineno and Chingoto, who have got that speed at that net, that twitch, which I observe. I mean, they're all very good, of course. I pale. So let's talk about your game. What's your favorite shot now, Danny?
I would say my forearm volley for sure.
Forehand volley.
When I have the day, well, often when I'm playing, I'm having a hard time to miss that particular shot. And that's a shot I really would like to have as a weapon. The rest of the years I'm playing.
That you need to get on it, and then that sharp cut, right? It's finding that the impact point and then dropping it so that it cuts off the back wall.
Exactly. And I can play it like straight in the middle and cross court. I don't think a lot when I'm playing that shot. It is always working.
It reminds me of Sampras a little bit. What about well, how do you describe your type of play overall? What sort of animal are you on a paddle court?
Animal, I would say a bear for sure.
A
Because
bear.
actually they are calling me the bear in Sweden, the polar bear. And that's because my roar on the courts, which are very dark and very high. I feel big on the court. I'm playing very fast. I like to get these volley emotions, and when it's getting fast, like if a match getting played fast, I'm more like confident in that match. And now I'm getting to play more slow and liking it, but when the match is played fast, I really love it.
So that means on courts that are a little bit warmer.
Warmer. And actually I like when there are a lot of wind as well, because then you are not able to use the smash so much. And then you are having this volley emotion, this mini tennis emotions a lot. And that's a game I really like.
Sweet. All right. What about a shot that you feel you need to work on? Which shot do you want to improve on the most?
The counter attack to, yeah, I mean, when they are hitting a not a bad smash, but a smash you need to jump and knock it out. That one I need to improve.
Oh, right. You know, the one that goes back over just enough for you to smash out with your backhand, back a la
Yeah,
Paquito, pop it.
exactly. I'm not bad at it, but it's a shot that I see the top 10 is doing 10 out of 10 on. They are not missing it.
Yeah,
And that's yeah.
it makes it look easy.
Yeah, exactly.
I have yet to manage to hit it out once. I mean,
Yeah.
I've got to it. I mean, I can still sometimes get to it, and then I remember I got to do it, because the other thing is, you know,
Yeah.
if you're not practicing it, all you're going to do is push it back. You know, oh, I
Yeah.
got to it, and then I'm glad, and then I just push it back. You try to find some hole, but the other idea of slapping it back down, you know, it takes a whole nother mindset there,
Yeah,
right? Love it.
to take advantage of it.
Oh, well, that you need to be quick on your feet and young
Yeah.
like you are, but Danny. And so what about the other players that you see on the court? You've actually had the privilege of playing against so many of them. Who do you admire the most amongst the women and amongst the men?
I admire a lot of the player Juan Martin Diaz.
Oh yeah, the lefty.
Yeah, exactly. I got the privilege to play by his side in America versus Europe, and I really like that kind of person, that kind of player on the court, and the way he thinks paddle and the way he's outside the paddle court, and yeah, I'm really big fan of him.
So what you're talking about there is that mentality, that the attitude to life at some level, not just his attitude on the court.
No, for sure. But I remember a video where when he was retiring last year, that he had been accomplished so many great things, to win so many titles, to be world number one for I don't know how many years, 12 years, 13 years. And the only thing he wanted to accomplish with the paddle was everyone to think he's a great guy. And it doesn't matter with the titles, it doesn't matter with the way he played paddle. He just wanted to be felt like he was appreciated and a great guy and a great person. And that is something to learn from. And that was something I was learning from him when I was playing against him and with him. And he was always so happy on the court.
I get the
And
feeling he was generous.
yeah, for sure, for sure. Very generous. And when I was I've been playing against him 3 times and I won 2 of them. And after each every match, and especially the wins I got, he was writing me a text later on the day and congrats, Annie, you really deserve the win and you are playing great paddle and I hope you continue to do it. And that doesn't happen so many times when you are beating a guy who has that reputation and that yeah, but that mentality and that accomplishment he had been having. So he have been inspiring me a lot.
So, and don't get me wrong. I definitely I hear you, and I wonder to what extent he's part of the passing generation, because it does seem that paddle is getting more sophisticated, it's getting more competitive, más dinero, more money. Do you think that paddle can keep that fiber of that generosity, the idea that it's about paddle, not just about winning?
I hope it will be learning from that kind of generosity, but I really think that paddle is going towards more the individualistic the way of thinking. It's just yourself. It's like in the tennis world that you're thinking about yourself, you're thinking about the best partner, and you want to increase the ranking no matter what people you have to get by. And it's a really, yeah, it's going to towards a more individual sport, which is not the, yeah, which I feel a pity.
You do get the feeling that there is something going on these days, at least from the outside that I know of. What about the funniest thing, Danny, that's ever happened to you in paddle, whether it's on or off the court, but round paddle? What's made you brought such joy?
The first thing I'm thinking of, it's the first paddle session I was playing, like in this period when I was playing 5 to 6 hours a day. I was playing with a guy named Håkan, and he was a funny guy, and I didn't know him since I was starting to play paddle. And he asked me that, "Daniel, I know you haven't been playing paddle for long, but you're one of the best in this country already. But could you play a division league with me for one league? Just I really want to win it. And for each win, I will give you a cinnamon bun." And I was, yeah, let's do it. I'm full on.
That is, you have to
And
have a little chutzpah to offer that, right? It's not like he
yeah.
said $10,000 or
No.
euros. A cinnamon bun. Oh my
Yeah.
God. I hope you like cinnamon buns because I hope you won lots of matches.
We won every matches we got, and we won the league that year, and that is 6 7 years ago. And but
Well,
that's a memory I will always carry with me. It was really
good
fun.
on. Good on you, Joachim. What? So you've had a very, I would say, deep journey with paddle. You're going high as well. What would you say your the life lesson of paddle has brought to you?
The most important thing is to enjoy life, and no matter what position you are in the ranking, no matter what position you are in anything, it's really about enjoying life. And if you want to succeed in yourself, in your own mind, it's if you could be happy alongside the journey you are doing, and not be so into the destination where you will be ending, you will be another person. And that's a really important lesson that I try to follow when periods of playing bad paddle and are heading up. And if you can just can enjoy life and be happy no matter what, it will be a great memory no matter what.
It seems actually that when you're happy, you also actually perform better too.
Yeah, for sure. Those are two ingredients that goes hand in hand, for sure.
So just to finish, Danny, you have this ambition with Solano to get to the quarters, but what's the future of paddle hold for you? And what do you think about the future of paddle in Sweden? Because it's obviously had a very up and now a little down life.
No, but I really think of the Swedish paddle is increasing, the level is increasing, the I see a bright future of paddle increasing in the whole country and becoming a almost a national sport, and I see a bright future there. And for me, I always felt that I was meant to be something big, but I'm not sure if it's as a player or as a coach or as a ingredients to help others to get their goals. I don't know, but I'm still trying to figuring out, and yeah, I'm learning by the process, and I see a bright future. And after my paddle career, I will for sure start to do my own academy and to for the Scandinavian people especially. And yeah, it's a future that lies bright.
How far in the future is it going to be before we have a Swedish top 10? I don't want to be silly and say top one,
No,
you know, but top 10.
no.
When do you think that can happen?
My goal, my highest goal in my paddle is top 20, but top 10. If I'm not able to say myself, I would say maybe 10, 15 years.
We all have a long way to go because they
Yeah.
have the infrastructure, the numbers, and the history of the thing. They
Yeah.
it's in sort of like in their blood, like of rugby
Yeah.
and New Zealanders. You know, you
Yeah.
can still be, you can still have 300 million people in your country and still be shit at football.
Yeah.
You know, like
Yeah.
America. I mean, well, not completely shit, but you know, basically they just don't know it yet.
No,
Anyway,
exactly.
Danny. It has been a super privilege and pleasure to chat with you. I thank you for your candor,
Likewise.
sharing the joy. It's a beautiful thing. I also wish you great success in the well, in life,
Yeah.
in paddle, and with your upcoming fiance. So, Danny,
Yeah.
vamos.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So I hope you've enjoyed this Joy of Paddle episode. Please don't forget to subscribe to be the first in queue for the next episode. And if you like what you hear, please do share around with other paddle aficionados. This is a sport that deserves to be played by absolutely everyone. And if you've got a story that you'd like to share, please send me an email or better yet, a voice note at nminterdial@gmail.com. With that, thanks for listening. And see you on the next episode of the Joy of Paddle podcast. Vamos!
Get ready, race fans, because the ultimate NASCAR experience is about to hit the airwaves. Welcome to Pit Pass NASCAR, the podcast that takes you deep into the heart-pounding world of NASCAR racing.
Join us each week as we bring you closer to the NASCAR action with exclusive interviews and all the news and rumors you need with your favorite drivers, team members, and industry insiders.
So whether you're a fan of super speedways, short ovals, or road racing, or you've just watched Talladega Nights, Pit Pass NASCAR is the podcast you've been waiting for.
Get ready to fuel your passion for NASCAR like never before. Subscribe now to Pit Pass NASCAR on your favorite podcast platform or head to evergreenpodcast.com and get ready to join us.
Launching in the fall on Evergreen Podcast Network. Follow us on social media at pitpass_NASCAR to stay up to date with everything you need to know about the podcast.